Appleby Manse, a large Edwardian house.
I wouldn't worry. I've got a whole wine cellar full of this stuff.
Inside the dining room, seven smartly dressed guests are sat around a rectangular table.
It's a true story.
A blonde woman smiles at the man opposite, but looks embarrassed when he doesn't smile back.
Exactly. Oh, God. Don't get me started on tales of menstruation.
It'd be better if there wasn't red tape everywhere you turn.
Well, there is a lot of history to protect in Oxford.
I'm just saying, these planning regs, they cripple a small business like mine.
Maybe it's time to stop being a small business then, Bri. That way I might even get some return on my investment, eh?
Oh, that's the one good thing about Croatia. You can do what you like with your own property.
Lewis. Young and handsome waiter Liam J sings while carrying plates back to the kitchen. As he puts the plates down, he wraps his arms around female waiter Ruth and kisses her on the cheek. Liam's dad Johnny puts down empty wine bottles.
So here's to you, my rambling boy. May all your rambling bring you joy. So here's to you, my rambling boy.
Rambling Boy, Part 1.
Well, it's going to be my project, you know, because...
Corby Manse. Tara, a woman in a sleeveless black dress, pours some coffee. Shuffling his tie a little, Tara's brother Matt Whitby comes upstairs from the cellar and puts down some wine bottles next to her. He hesitates for a moment before ambling back to the dining table. Another blonde, Emma Barnes, emerges from the cellar and also heads back to the table but looks upset.
Are you all right? I need a drink.
Peter, Tara's husband with combed back grey hair, looks at Matt, then leans in towards him.
All right.
Fine. Thanks.
Matt looks at him sternly. Peter smirks a little.
Do you like some more wine, Jack?
Oh, thank you. Just a drop.
Tara and the dark-haired man smile at each other flirtatiously. Peter grins but seems silently vexed. Peter then joins Tara at the drinks table.
We're still on the wine.
I'm going on to the grain.
Oh, wonderful. So we can expect embarrassing jokes any time now. Jack, would you come over here and help me open the dessert wine?
Come along, good doggy.
Jack, the dark-haired man, walks over to Tara.
I know he's a bit of a flirt.
Doesn't mean anything.
Thanks, Robbie. I didn't know who else to talk to.
Lewis is at Jack's house.
He said he'll pay the mortgage and send money for the boys. As if that's all that matters.
Well, I'll try to talk to him. This flat he's taken.
Yeah.
Louise gives Lewis a piece of paper.
I'll call him first.
Yeah. He's blocking my calls, but he'll listen to you.
Well, I'll do my best. I'm sure it's just a... People don't change that much. Jack's a good bloke. And he thinks the world of you and the boys. I know he does.
Meanwhile, Jack walks back to the table, his hand around Tara's bottom.
Top up.
Driving. Okay.
Do you want more?
That'll be great.
What's your liver?
While sipping from his drink, Peter stares intently at Jack and his anger seems to be boiling. Lewis is walking through a busy village street in Oxford. Lewis gives some change to the busker playing the violin and then makes a call on his mobile phone.
Jack, it's Robbie Lewis. Just touching base. And I'll see how you are. Give us a ring sometime. Well, any time. If you think there's anything I can do to help in any way. You must miss the boys a lot and, well...
Lewis stops and looks over a concrete bridge while making the call. He then hangs up and heads off. A mild evening. Dark hasn't set in yet. Wearing a grey suit and purple tie, Lewis strolls across a riverside pathway. He stops for a moment to watch two rowers working together in synchronisation. Dr. Laura Hobson, with short blonde hair, waits anxiously on a wooden table outside a bar, a drink in her hand. Seeing Lewis, she smiles. Suddenly, a man wearing a sand-coloured jacket approaches, beaming and waving enthusiastically at Hobson. She gives him a short, polite wave, but her smile quickly fades as an oblivious Lewis turns round and walks away. Corby Mant's kitchen.
There you go, wild youth. Wild lass.
Great, Dad. More jobs like this, I can stop doing Mr. Miller's funeral.
Hey, don't you know about funerals? We all die eventually. Good steady income.
Morbid.
And you? Do some studying.
I will.
Ruth leaves the kitchen, but Liam catches a word with Johnny.
You okay, Dad? Do you know?
No. I'm not.
You sure you won't? One day at a time, yeah?
Don't worry.
Sober as a judge.
Johnny pats his son on the shoulder. Liam then walks out. Johnny, with a podgy belly and a dark beard, places the rusty cash box into a drawer and tries to close it, but it jams. He rustles behind the drawer and finds a red notebook. He then cautiously peers into the dining room before deciding to open the notebook.
Jack, can I get you a liqueur?
Thanks, no. Driving.
I thought you just had a flash your warrant card if you got stopped.
Those were the days.
Tara can't help smiling and gazes down at the table. Husband Peter continues to look furious despite putting on the occasional smile. Meanwhile, Johnny's studying the notebook carefully. Hearing footsteps, Johnny quickly hides the notebook inside the front of his trousers before closing the drawer. Outside the wine bar, Hobson rides away on her bike, leaving her date in the sandy jacket, waving eagerly. Looking less than pleased, she stops by the river for a while and looks out at the water.
It's really lovely. It's a really lovely town. And tell me about the wallpapers.
Dinner party guest Beverly Miller's leaving Corby Mance. As she's walking through the driveway... Beverly tries to look inside but stumbles in her heels.
You getting in then?
Her skinny husband Brian's waiting in the car.
It's all kicking off in there.
Beverly gets in the car.
Stop being a small businessman. Who the hell does he think he is? My boss.
Beverly's smile drops as she clicks in her seatbelt. An agitated Brian reverses his Audi out of the driveway. A doorstop in the shape of a lion's head rests on the kitchen floor, amidst a dark pool of blood. A funeral viewing. Undertaker Brian Miller writes on a whiteboard, "Neil Strickley, 10 a.m. Tuesday," as his assistant wheels the open casket into a fridge. Ruth lies on the grass reading as boyfriend Liam Jay strums an acoustic guitar.
Having my baby, you're the woman I love, and I love what it's doing to you.
You're supposed to be studying.
I'm a woman in love, and I love what it's doing to me. I didn't have to keep it, I wouldn't put you through it.
Gross. That's never gonna happen to me, babe.
Good.
That's me. Just gotta hope it sticks.
I'm supposed to get my hat from work.
Oh, Lee, I knew you'd forget.
It's all right. I can go and get it.
You stand no chance. Everyone goes as Dracula.
Yeah, but not everyone has a beautiful corpse.
There is more to Dracula than a set of fangs, you know.
Evening at the Reluctant Scholar pub. Hathaway packs his bag as Lewis joins him.
All packed and ready to go.
Time for a last pint.
They both take gulps from their beers.
So, Pristina. Holiday resort, is it?
Not quite a resort, no.
Right. But it's seaside.
Not exactly, sir. I've cleared my desk. I don't think there's anything outstanding.
I'm a poster boy of police efficiency. Try and stay that way.
Sir?
When people change, try and keep hold of who you are.
I'm going on holiday for a week. I'm not joining the Foreign Legion.
I wouldn't have you. Too posh.
Liam and Ruth are leaving the lavish college grounds wearing fancy dress.
What do you like?
They greet other students in fancy dress.
I'll see you in 10 minutes, tops.
Liam pecks Ruth on the cheek and starts to walk off. He then turns back round and gives her the huge coffin top he's carrying. A group of partygoers, including a scantily clad girl, a bumblebee, and an alien, walk past Brian's funeral services. Liam lets himself in. Wearing all black and with two streaks of fake blood dripping from his mouth, Liam walks through a short side passage and reaches the parking area at the back of the undertaker's. Some vehicles, including two motorbikes, a hearse, and two vans, are parked up. Liam slows down when he notices someone take a big black sack out of a van and drag it along the ground. Looking unsettled, Liam turns round and decides to walk away. Soon after, and smiling, Liam rejoins Ruth.
Is it forever? Where is it? That?
There was someone there. You know, a viewing a body.
Never mind. Come on, the others went in ages ago. Put your fangs in.
Police cars are parked at a crime scene around a country track.
Yeah, look around the immediate area, see what you find.
A man in a suit is lying dead, face down in a ditch. Wearing a white lab outfit, Laura Hobson's examining the body.
Morning, Robbie.
Laura, what we got?
A grey-haired man.
Gentleman of mature years. Been dead some time, but a bit of a puzzle. No maggots, no visible pooling. Tongues not distended, the nails...
Spare us.
Best suit, polished shoes, clean white hanky in top pocket. No underpants.
No kek?
Ah, you can take that lad out of Newcastle. Not your usual focused self, Robbie. Where's Hathaway?
On his holidays. You ever meet Jack Cornish? Fast-track detective, destined for great things.
Yeah, I've met him. Why?
Well, it's just... we were always great mates. You know, cut from the same cloth and... Oh, ignore me.
Is that it?
Afraid not, saving the best till last. If I were to say all the usual offices have been performed... Thing is, Robbie, this gentleman's already been put through the tender hands of an undertaker.
The crime scene around the country track. Lewis crouches down and picks up an empty sandwich packet.
Interesting.
That's before the 15th. That was when? Last week.
You're a single bloke. Zap it in the microwave. Be fine.
Later, Lewis is talking to Innocent at the police station.
You know Jack Cornish well?
Yeah, I worked with him for 3 years.
Well, the big gossip that even I can't avoid is he's having an affair with Tara Faulkner.
Peter Faulkner's wife?
Pretty solid. Everyone knows.
Oh, Jack's wife doesn't.
Please, Robbie.
No wonder he's not answering the phone. Peter Faulkner's wife?
Have you met her?
Well, spent a few fruitless hours interviewing her husband. We didn't like each other much.
So I hear. Not a good partner for an ambitious copper. Your pal needs to extricate himself double quick. Haven't you got a body to investigate?
Lewis shakes his head in disbelief and leaves the superintendent's office. The mortuary. A worker wheels the dead body from the track into a fridge. Lewis arrives and approaches Hobson, who's washing a surface.
There's no obvious cause of death. No broken bones, skulls complete, hyoids intact.
So, not battered or strangled, then?
The soft tissues are too decomposed to tell us anything, and the organs have been mucked about with. Can't do a blood test due to the embalming fluid in his veins.
And still no identification?
Nope. Been through all his pockets.
You're enjoying this?
I'm just wondering how you're going to start untangling it.
With great skill.
And without Hathaway, be like having one hand tied behind your back.
He waves a hand behind his back as he heads out again.
So I suppose there's not a lot you can do until you find out who this gentleman is, or was.
No, we're waiting for the search results, ma'am. And in the meantime...
Yes, come in, Gray.
Sorry, ma'am. MDC Gray, sir.
Right.
Lewis nods dismissively.
I was told...
DC Gray is your right-hand man, in Hathaway's absence. He's just out of uniform.
Is he? Good. Maybe you could...
Of course. Right.
The young black officer smiles and leaves again.
Detective Constable. Thank you, Mum.
When I asked for volunteers to work with you, he was the only one who put up his hand. Be nice, Robbie.
If Inspector Morse had been nice, I'd still be a sergeant.
Yeah, well, that man's got a lot to answer for.
Innocent swallows a tablet with some water and grimaces in disgust. College. Emma Barnes, the woman who was upset at the dinner party, is handing back papers to her students in a tutorial room.
None of these essays lightened my heart, but Liam J., words fail me. Where is he? Any idea?
Ruth.
I thought he'd be here. Sorry.
Why should you be sorry? It's hardly your fault. Usually when work is cribbed wholesale from the net, some small effort is made to disguise the fact. Do tell him.
The two other students give Ruth a sympathetic look. Soon after, she meets up with boyfriend Liam, who's waiting outside, holding his guitar case.
At last. How do you fancy an hour or two busking?
You're in so much trouble.
Oh.
See you later!
The Bodleians heaving with Americans. We'll clean up.
Promise your dad you'd start studying.
And I will. Come on, Ruth, I need the money. We don't all live in a cosy little rent-free boat, do we?
Lewis and Hobson outside a pub.
Don't be grumpy. Halfway's having a holiday.
Says he is.
Oh. Like that, is it? Ah, come on.
He thinks I don't know about it. Some old churchy pals of his have roped him in for some do-goodery.
Oh, no.
Fixing up an orphanage. More or less press-ganged him into it.
Oh, James.
Get on. He'll fit straight back in with all of them. He wouldn't have fun if it jumped up and smacked him in the gob.
But you would?
Oh, I've had my share.
In the distant past. Although you did give yourself up to wild abandon the other night. Friday? Drinking in the beauty of the river, standing in the dusk and just gazing at the sight.
Oh, yeah. A body. Well, I thought I saw a body. But, it wasn't. It was a log. What? Yeah, Lewis. Neil Strictly. Good, thanks. Name band. Cut off his wrist or his ankle. Found about 100 yards from the body. Still something to work on. Sorry. Your treat.
Hobson smiles. Later at the health centre.
We're not asking you to break any confidences.
I'm already late for my calls.
GP Matt Whitby from the party.
He'd been our patient for 3 years. Nothing unusual about his death. Cancer.
Do you know the family?
Whitby's trying to get away.
I don't know any families. I just sit in there like a priest in the confessional and they bring me their scabs and their limps and their imagined ailments one after another.
You like your job?
Probably as much as you like yours. Sorry, I can't be more help.
Lewis shakes his head as Whitby briskly walks off. Later on, Lewis is waiting at the mortuary when his temporary assistant Gray walks in with Undertaker Brian.
You're the Undertaker.
Mr. Miller, Detective Inspector Lewis.
Yeah, there's no way this is Mr. Strictly. We cremated him on Tuesday.
You'd recognise him.
Of course, I laid him out. I prepared him.
Lewis reveals the dead body of the old man with grey hair.
Mr. Strictly was in that coffin. I brought him in it. I drove the hearse to the crematorium.
So why didn't you stop him clambering out?
Crematorium worker Derek checks a name tag on a wooden coffin.
So you always check the name?
Yeah. Don't want to send the wrong one off, do we?
Is that it?
Yeah, pretty much.
How do you know there's anything inside it?
It comes from the Undertaker, must be. And it gets carried in, so we'd know if the coffin was empty.
It needn't be a body, it could be books, bricks, anything.
I always check the furnace. Spy hole. Coffins burn away in minutes. Made out of rubbish, mostly.
Well, you can see the body in there.
Yeah. I was on duty for Mr. Strictly, and I always, always check. It's just a habit. Last person to see him, you could say.
Okay, on you go.
Derek slides the coffin into the furnace. Lewis walks out of the crematorium, where wreaths are laid on the ground in neatly arranged plots. He stops by several bunches of flowers, all in different shades of pretty pink and purple. One message reads, "Loving wife," and another says, "To my wife, I will miss you always." Pausing for a few moments, Lewis looks up and sees a family consoling and walking away with a distraught man. The police station.
And this is the sum total of your knowledge?
I can remember a few lines of the Ancient Mariner, ma'am. The search team's still on the scene. It's a favourite spot for fly tippers, so it could take some time. What?
Peter Faulkner should be on that list, sir. According to a company's house, he owns 80% of Miller's business.
He's an investor. That doesn't mean he's directly involved.
It doesn't mean he isn't.
OK, you can renew your old friendship. Just be nice.
Innocent nods at Grey, who smiles back, looking pleased. Lewis pulls up his BMW outside the huge Corby manse, which is surrounded by grass and views of the countryside. He's talking to Peter.
I have several business interests. Garages, construction, all sorts. But you already know that, don't you?
I do. But I'm concentrating on this latest investigation, sir. When did you last have any involvement with the funeral company?
I look at the accounts from time to time.
When did you last go there?
A couple of years ago, when it opened.
So there'd be no need to take your fingerprints for the purposes of elimination?
Absolutely not. And your wife? Does she look as if she hangs around funeral parlours?
Would it be possible to speak to her, sir?
Tara's on holiday, and she isn't taking calls.
Where is she staying?
No idea. Some mysterious destination. She's run off with one of your lot.
When was this, sir?
One lovely summer's night.
Lewis raises his eyebrows. Holding a glass of whiskey, Peter reaches into his pocket and takes out his phone.
The 17th.
And where do you think she might have gone?
The world's her oyster. Now I've got work to do.
You're not worried about her, sir?
Tara's a grown woman.
A stuffed owl and ferret.
Predator on predator. Worthy opponents.
Heartwarming.
It is. No one I know can put up a half-decent fight. Present company included.
Lewis glares at Peter for a second before walking out sharply. Peter chuckles to himself. Gray's interviewing Liam at the Undertaker's.
I come in when Mr. Miller needs a pallbearer.
Lewis arrives.
And sometimes they need me for a repatriation, bringing a body back from Spain or somewhere. That pays really well.
Funny job for a student.
My dad got me it.
You were at Neil Strickley's funeral. Anything unusual?
No.
Seem very sure.
I am.
Corby Mance, 6 p.m. the 17th.
Liam looks anxious. Soon after, he leaves the Undertaker's. At the health centre, Whitby's packing his briefcase in his office when Liam comes through the door.
The police have been... Liam, surgery's over.
They say we've lost a body, Mr. Strickley. It was that night. It has to be. I knew it was something weird.
You don't know anything. Calm down.
Why would anyone steal a body?
Why, indeed. It's nothing to do with us. You're sweating. Do you need something?
Outside Brian's Undertaker's.
You were at Corby Mance 4 days before the Strictly cremation.
About that? I had one of their famous suppers. Dr. Whitby, his girlfriend, all the usual suspects. Sorry, unfortunate turn of phrase.
Good evening.
Very. Everyone on good form.
And how long since Peter Faulkner had a look around his investment?
Came here, he doesn't. I run the place.
He turns to Lewis.
I'm the boss.
The waiting room in the health centre. An old man looks at his watch impatiently, then approaches a nurse. Inside his office, Dr. Whitby slumped face down against his desk, with pills and a bottle scattered everywhere.
9 o'clock, my appointment. How much longer?
He may have been called out to an emergency.
Has he not got a mobile phone?
Lewis is at the health centre looking at Whitby slumped on his desk.
You just can't get enough of me, can you?
I'll take out a restraining order if you don't pack it in. Looks like another GP suicide.
No note?
Not so far.
Hobson peers over Whitby.
Okay, well, I won't be here long. Reeks of whiskey and the pills tell their own tale. Post-mortem should be pretty straightforward.
That's what you said about Mr. Strickley. Another fine mess you got me into.
Lewis leaves. His assistant Gray's waiting outside the office.
The next of kin.
You find him?
No, sir, that's it. His next of kin is Tara Faulkner.
Okay. The facts so far. Body's removed from its coffin. Somebody else is cremated in its place. Peter Faulkner, who owns the lion's share of the funeral parlour, says his wife's gone off on some mystery holiday, and her brother's found dead. Tara Faulkner was last seen on the 17th. She was killed that evening and then cremated 4 days later. This suicide could be Matt Whitby's confession.
Corby Mance.
Sorry, I can't take it in. He killed himself.
And you still haven't heard from your wife, sir? Only as Dr. Whitby's next of kin, we really do need to speak to her.
I've already told you.
When did you last see Dr. Whitby?
Not yesterday, the day before.
A notepad.
And this is everybody that was at your dinner party.
Let me in, please. Peter? Peter? Peter?
Madam, just a second.
No, Mr. Faulkner. Excuse me. Peter? I've just come past the surgery. Someone said... Is it true?
Emma has burst in.
But it can't be. Not Matt. Why would he be...
A shell-shocked Emma puts her right hand over her mouth and walks back out of the room.
Probably topped himself to get away from her.
Lewis gets up.
The limpet.
What time did you leave the party?
Our first to go.
Lewis is speaking to Emma in the sitting room.
I'd had enough of the humiliation.
I'm sorry?
I bored him. He made me feel like a sad old... academic spinster.
You and Dr. Whitby were...
We were together. Sometimes. Never quite sure if we were on or off. Not a match made in heaven. Purgatory, maybe.
Matt Whitby's funeral.
Were you the last guest to leave?
Yes, I think so. Maybe Matt Whitby, and I'm not sure about the policeman.
Oh, he was still there.
Might be, unable to tear himself away from Tara Faulkner.
Brian's wife, Beverly Miller.
She will be in pieces about her brother. She didn't have any of the family, or none that wanted anything to do with her.
You don't like her much.
Tara Faulkner's only hobby is upsetting people, banging on about her architect or her interior designer. The latest thing being some precious farmhouse in Transylvania or somewhere. No, Croatia, that's it.
Later on, Lewis is sitting in his office chair, staring at a framed photo of him and his late wife. Lewis checks his phone, then gets up and begins walking out. He runs into Dr. Laura Hobson.
I'm not going to make you a happy man.
I'm always happy. My face is misleading.
The assumed suicide.
Might just be murder.
He was poisoned. Mixture of PCP, methanol and formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde?
Embalming fluid. Combined with the alcohol and the diazepam, and there was some of it in his lungs.
Any sign of bruising to indicate he'd been held down?
Possibly, but he's been face down on his desk all night, and it's very difficult to find bruising through lividity. All right, I'll have another look.
I'll try not to pester you, but if you could...
Hurry it up. Don't push it.
Gray's interviewing Liam in another room.
It'd be several times over the last few months.
Lewis...
Second time we met this week. What were you doing at the doctor's?
It was nothing. A routine visit.
He didn't have an appointment, but Dr. Whitby said he'd see him. And he was at the Faulkner's dinner party, sir. A waiter.
And you work at Miller's?
What's that got to do with Dr. Whitby's death?
Probably nothing. Can you tell us why you went to the surgery?
It's private. Sorry.
Any objection if we take a look at your room?
Liam's room.
His mobile, sir. Didn't seem to use it much. No calls on the day he died.
Okay. And no texts?
Didn't text and only ever received one that was way back on the 20th, 10 p.m. Just says World Cup.
World Cup?
From a pay-as-you-go phone, bought that same day. Hasn't been used since.
Jean Innocent.
This is Liam's room?
Yeah, worth a look, Mum. Yeah, he was at Mr. Strictly's fake funeral and he was the last patient to see Dr. Whitby.
Found anything interesting?
Well, a couple of old diazepam bottles, both prescribed to him.
So, not at all interesting then? We're getting nowhere fast.
Well, not entirely.
The Faulkners have a farmhouse that he neglected to tell us about in Croatia.
And?
Well, I'd just like to chat with Mr. Faulkner, Mum. Horse's mouth and all that.
She walks off with a sigh and a slight smile. Liam's running up the stairs to the tutorial room.
Isn't this thesis has a primary biological urge to reproduce? Wouldn't we all want to be parents?
And don't we?
Do we?
Liam arrives.
Sorry, everyone. Have I missed much?
Just most of the term.
Oops.
Emma looks stern. Liam and Ruth look shocked.
I'll inform your senior tutor that you've left my course.
That's...
You need to find out what options you have. Whatever they are, you will not be rejoining this course.
Ruth's eyes widen, and Claire and Amy, the two other students, stare at Liam. Flustered and lost for words, he eventually picks up his bag and leaves. Brown-haired Ruth picks up her pad and textbooks and quickly stands up.
Must I lose two students?
Ruth stares at Emma for a moment before slowly sitting down again. Emma allows herself a discreet smile.
You have to see your senior tutor. You've not been sent down.
On Ruth's boat, Liam's throwing his books into the river.
Liam. Most fun I've had in weeks.
Idiot.
Yeah, I am. It's not my fault. It's in the genes. I'm like my dad, a loser.
Your dad, call him. Tell him he'll know what to do.
Yeah, right. He's off on a binge, like always. It's what he does, Ruth. Lets you down. Just like me.
Forensics officers in white suits have arrived at Corby Manse. They unload equipment from their minivan. Inside, an investigator comes down the stairs and two others walk past him carrying a box. Two more take photos. The doorstop of the lion's head rests on the floor. Lewis, Peter and his lawyer.
Did you mention your Croatian property when we asked where she might have gone?
If you knew my wife and you'd seen that farmhouse, it's a wreck. It's damp, half derelict, no electricity. My wife wouldn't be seen dead there.
On the night of your supper party...
Oh, not again.
We believe you had an argument with your wife.
Probably. It's how we like to round off the day.
Can you tell me what it was about?
My client chooses not to say anything. Chief Superintendent Jack Cornish. I couldn't stomach it any longer. We had a slanging match and the two of them left. Together.
Lewis smiles slightly as Peter leans back in his chair.
Stores his embalming fluid.
What? In the embalming fluid cupboard, I suppose. How long do I have to take this
for? Do you and your wife often take separate holidays?
Sometimes.
How would you describe your marriage?
Heterosexual. What the hell are you on about?
When you fought that night after your guests left...
Argued.
I think you hit her. Or she hit you. We have forensics officers at your home. There will be forensic.
I strongly advise you to remain silent.
In the fight, I think your wife died. So you swapped her body for one at the undertaker's. Then somehow her brother found out, so... What?
Sorry, sir, you're wanted downstairs urgently.
Right, 2 minutes. 2 minutes?
Gray doesn't
Chief
move.
Superintendent Innocent said to stress the surgeon, sir.
Lewis glances at Peter and his lawyer and briskly follows Gray out of the room. An officer steps in.
One more minute, we'd had him charged and locked up.
I don't think you've met Mrs. Faulkner.
Peter's wife, Tara.
Sorry, guys, we're all stood down. Search over.
All right.
A forensics officer packs up his box and leaves Corby Mance, neglecting the lion-headed doorstop on the floor. Back at the police station...
And now we've got to tell her brother's been murdered.
Her husband's on the way down from the interview room, ma'am, so she's not completely alone.
Oh, the man you reckoned had murdered her and then killed her brother to shut him up. Yeah, that one? Do you think that'll make it easier? We're both going to get dragged over the coals for this. Thank you so much.
Lewis looks at Grey, who puffs out his cheeks. The college grounds. Large sand-coloured buildings with skinny but huge arch-shaped windows. A smiling Ruth bounces out of one of the buildings with her tutorial group. As she sees Liam waiting for her outside, her smile fades, but they walk along together side by side.
I just need a bit of help. Get me some pills. Say you're depressed.
No.
Right, fine. Go your own way and I'll go mine.
He shoves her.
I'm sorry.
You're not making any sense.
Get me some pills, anything.
You're ruining everything. You're messing up your life and now you want to mess up mine.
No, I don't. I won't. I'll sort myself.
They're over.
Emma's watching them from behind a door.
That's right. Walk out on me. Everyone does.
Liam, you're not going to do anything stupid.
Something I should have done days ago.
Where are you going?
Please.
Emma comes out.
Shooting star. That's what he is. Lighting up the night sky. Exciting and amazing. But what is he really? They burn out, you know. They turn into useless lumps. Trust me.
In the police station, a grief-stricken Tara staring into space as husband Peter clutches her hand.
Maybe if you take Mrs. Faulkner home, sir. We will need to talk later, but it can wait.
Oh, bloody hell, not that stupid missing body thing again. How many times do I...
Can I see him?
Of course. I'll take you over there.
I can take her.
No. Why isn't it you lying dead and cold instead of Matt?
Peter's mouth drops open.
I want to say goodbye to him in private.
Tara scowls at Peter and snatches her hand away from his. Outside, Liam's sitting anxiously.
Sir... There's a young man wants to talk to you, Liam Jay.
I can't talk to him at the moment.
He says it's urgent. A bit agitated, sir.
Get him away. Mrs. Faulkner.
Tara and Liam stare into each other's eyes before she's escorted out by Lewis.
Who did this? Was it a patient?
We don't know. I'm sorry.
The mortuary.
It was. I know it was. Some truckie. Was too good to them. I told him.
Tara sobs as she sits next to her brother's body. Later, Lewis arrives back at the station and speaks to the desk officer.
Liam Jay?
Got tired of waiting.
Call me if he turns up again.
Lewis sighs and walks off. Meanwhile, on a pleasant afternoon in Oxford, Liam's walking along a towpath past some long houseboats. He stops to check a text message on his iPhone. It's from his dad, Johnny, and reads, "Hi, son. Meet Miller's, 7 p.m. Liam smiles to himself and carries on.
Maybe his sister's right. If this student...
Liam J.
...was the last patient to see him, and we know he's on prescription drugs...
People kill for crack cocaine, ma'am, not diazepam, and this kid's no killer.
Famous last words.
They're in the CID room.
I know you think I'm fixated on the Faulkners, but if Jack Cornish was looking into their affairs and they thought he was getting a bit too close...
Maybe they killed him. It's a bit of a leap.
Well, he was at their party and he has gone missing. Someone was cremating, huh?
You said that was Tara Faulkner. And now you reckon it's Jack Cornish. It's just a bit random, Robbie.
Well, there was a fight, and if... Jack was getting close to making an arrest.
If. He wasn't investigating the Faulkners. I've spoken to his number two.
Oh, we still don't know whether Tara Faulkner left with him. Maybe she went off on her own.
Is anyone trying to track her movements?
Yeah, we're on to the border agency. Hobson. Hi. Excuse me, ma'am. Yeah. Right, why don't we try and meet halfway?
Lewis meets Dr. Hobson on a quaint village street in Oxford.
I've found your anti-mortem bruising on Dr. Whitby. Two areas of pressure either side of the neck whilst he was sitting, probably too drunk to get up or fight them off because the bruising was pretty light.
She demonstrates by stroking his shoulders.
Final toxicology report. Nothing new, same as before. Drunk stomach awash with whiskey and undigested pills.
Lewis gestures with his left hand and they begin walking. Hobson looks a little embarrassed.
Faulkner's into whiskey.
As are a lot of people.
Yeah, Faulkner said, when his wife suddenly turned up, he said, not this stupid lost body thing again. But if she went off on the night of the party, she hadn't been in touch with anybody since, why didn't she say to him, what are you talking about?
Well, he just told her that her brother was dead.
No. She knew. Her and her husband pretend to be at each other's throats, but actually they're thick as thieves.
No, not she ran off with Jack Cornish.
Yeah, I'll bet my pension she didn't. He wouldn't have anything to do with a woman like her.
You think it was him in that coffin, don't you?
Oh, I hope not, but I think he might have been about to uncover something big. So the Faulkner's killed him.
And Dr. Whitby? Think he was in on the murder?
I don't know yet. But I'm sure his murder links back to the Faulkner's too. Never mind. There's a lad wants to tell me something. Maybe he's going to wrap up all the answers for us nice and neat.
Lewis pulls up outside Brian Miller's undertakers, just as Brian himself is getting out of his blue Peugeot.
Looking for Liam J, sir.
Didn't need him today.
OK, I'll try his girlfriend.
Door entry code.
1966. Used to be 1066, but we changed it.
Why would that be on Dr. Whitby's phone?
Don't follow.
What, a text? World Cup. Did you send it to Dr. Whitby?
You've lost me, Inspector. I never sent anything to Dr. Whitby.
Lewis follows Brian into the reception area.
Who else knows the entry code?
Everyone who needs to.
Right. How often has it changed?
And why is that open?
Shouldn't it be?
That leads through to the refrigeration room.
Lewis warily walks through the open door and glances around. Wearing a grey jacket, an apprehensive-looking Brian follows him.
No one?
Lewis stands still and shakes his head. Brian walks in and nervously looks around the refrigeration room.
You get some stupid kids daring each other. Ghouls.
Check the fridges.
What?
Lewis nods at a fridge, so Brian opens one. It looks normal inside.
We haven't got anyone.
Brian opens another fridge. Liam's unconscious with a bloody head.
Mr. Miller.
Lewis frantically checks for a pulse.
999, an ambulance! He's dead! Yeah, not far off. Go on, phone, now! Come on, son. Stay with me!
Next time on Lewis.
I can see it in your eyes. You think something terrible's happened.
We don't know what's happened yet. I need to get to a farmhouse just outside Split.
You know, Split's in another country.
Your ferret's not doing very well. Losing his teeth.
Careful, Robbie. There'll be gas bottles.
ITFC audio description.